With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Looking for a podcast about The Mandalorian? Well, hey, haha, this is The Way. It's The Mandalorian Podcast here on Post Show Recaps, talking Season 2, Episode 4 of The Mandalorian, a.k.a. Chapter 12, The Siege. I'm Josh Wigler. I'm joined here by the person who is supposed to be piloting this thing, but we keep like hitting rocky territory, and I don't know why you didn't just use the elevator, Kevin.
Listen, I don't like elevators. Who knows what could go wrong in there, especially after watching M. Night Shyamalan.
She just could drive us off a cliff.
I mean, listen, if we're in a tank, let's see what this tank can do. I think we'll be fine. Whatever's below us, not so much, but we'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also joined here, of course, by the woman who last week manifested this week's focused on Karen Dune, LaTanya Starks. LaTanya, welcome back, my friend.
Hello. I don't know if that's how I want to be known, but sure.
Known for so many other things. Known as one of my favorite people ever.
Yay.
Known as protector of the child.
Mm-hmm. And the realm, really.
And the realm as well.
I have so many titles. You don't have to. I won't make you Daenerys them all out.
That'll be like 90 minutes and we'll.
Yeah. I'm way more relaxed about things than Daenerys was.
And then we'll have no time to get into everything that happened in a very lore packed. Do we want to say that? Lore packed? It's a packed filled with lore. Very mythologically heavy episode of the Mando. There's a lot going on. I know that like some of it doesn't maybe seem like mega obvious, but there's certainly like a lot of things that are happening in this episode that are probably going to be really important for the long term. And then I think there's some questions about like balancing that against the quality of the episode, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
I might be alone here, but I thought it was fine.
Yeah,
it was fine.
It was. I mean, to me, it was just like,
it was fun.
Yeah, it was a good episode. I mean, like,
it was good.
I don't know. There's a lot of people, I feel like, these days
probably the weakest episode of The Mandalorian, but that's fine,
I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to judge that, though. Like, maybe this is going to be a super important episode later, but, like, it was entertaining. I put it up there with, like, the Ice Planet. I mean, I've been enjoying the ride, and, like,
Ice Planet's got identity. Ice Planet's got uniqueness. Ice Planet had some shit that I will not say at the risk of triggering somebody, but I don't even know if I've been unblocked on Twitter yet, and even just by saying that, yeah. I just probably got myself blocked again.
Well, it doesn't have
Ice Planet had its own weird thing going on.
It doesn't have Carl Weathers.
That's true.
It doesn't have Carl Weathers, but this episode has like a lot of like Star Wars iconography, and that's great. But like, we've raided the Death Star before; that's happened.
Well, it seems like this episode, though, potentially helped make the most recent trilogy make sense. Maybe.
Yeah, there's some of that.
Did it?
Huh?
Wait. What?
Yeah. Well, we're gonna talk about that. That's why we're saying lore. Oh God,
is this how Palpatine's back? If this somehow contributes to some of the stuff in the new trilogy, I might hate this episode. So we'll see.
We think it might. It's lore packed. A lore packed week on Mando. We're going to get into all of it. We'll get into your feedback as well, which of course you can email to us, starwars@postshowrecaps.com. You can also talk to us in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord if you sign up for the Patreon at the cord cutter level. Check that out, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. There is always a very robust Star Wars and Mandalorian conversation that happens, certainly on those Fridays, and then all through the weekend as well. Really, really great revealing, illuminating discourse in the Discord. Before we get into this any further, I want to take a quick second to thank our sponsors for this episode of Post-Show Recap. Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Do you need an escape? Well, drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah, free. No subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android, iPhone, Roku, Fire TV. Start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free. All right. Let's talk Mando, The Siege. Directed by Kevin Mahadeo's favorite person of all time, Carl Weathers.
Favorite person of all time. That's high, but I don't...
Where does he rank? Where does he rank in terms of your favorite people?
I mean, he's pretty high up. I like Carl Weathers a lot. I mean, like, he's been in... I mean, I love the Rocky franchise. There's no question there, I think, for me. Those movies are amazing. And although he's not in there, the character's impact on Creed, which is... Hilariously, Creed probably is the best Rocky movie. But... is unquestionable, and of course Predator. His
Predator
Arrested Development. I made the joke when they landed about making a good stew. So like he's, you know, and Happy Gilmore. Like there's a lot in Carl Weathers I really enjoy and I really like, and not the least of which is his just insistence of saying Mando over and over again.
Mando, I love it. It's my favorite.
It's great.
I love how he bellows it, and I also do love that it does seem like Mando leaves Navarro, LaTanya, and then comes back mm-hmm. to Navarro to find Greef Karga just like in the exact spot he left him.
Oh, of course. Where else is he going to go? I mean, he holds court, Greef, and he's doing a great job of it. You know, he has really helped clean things up around Navarro, it seems.
Navarro's looking good.
Yeah, and it's always great to, you know, have him do his like warm Mando, and he's so cute with the little child.
Loves that little baby.
He's so cute with that little baby. Yeah. Like, let's just have more of Greef Karga greeting Mando and the child, and like taking the child to school and dropping him off and maybe picking him up and like having a snack afterwards. Let's have that.
I like that.
That sounds like a fun episode to me.
One of my favorite
just like
things,
a family reunion with where a ship is fixed.
One of my favorite things I watched before. I think it was before the season, was this supercut of every time Greef Karga says Mando over the course of the show. So it's like only like a minute long or something like that. But like, you know, it was good. It was great. So by the end of season two, it might be more robust.
I expect it. And I know it's never going to happen. And it's a reversal of lines. But every time he says it, though, especially just now in this episode where he comes off the ship, I just want him to be like, Mando, you son of a bitch, and then just grab the arms.
Like, yeah, be good. Yeah. What's the matter, Greef Karga? The Bounty Hunters Guild got you pushing too many pencils.
He is now, right? Like, he's sort of like gone back into that type of role here.
Company man.
Yeah, that's kind of what he does now, but he seems to be doing great overall, you know?
Overall, he's doing
really
well.
Mean to his assistant, who is a criminal serving 300 years, but still.
Oh my god!
Who still doesn't have a name?
No, he does. According to Wiki, he's Mithril.
Okay.
Is Horatio Sands' character?
That's not the name of the species.
Maybe it is the name of the species, and maybe they're just calling him Mithril, and they're not even bothering to get to know him.
Just Horatio Sands. That's who he is. That's his name.
Which, the Mithril were a sentient humanoid species with amphibious traits. Do we want to name him? We love to name a character. You want to call him Manny?
Manny.
Or is that too close to Mando?
That's very close to Mando.
To be fair, this does track for the character, right? Like, he's calling him Mando, and he's calling him Mithril. Like, he just calls people by what they are.
He calls people
not by name.
What they are.
Yeah.
I am black woman.
Yeah.
No. You know?
I don't
know. That's how that would go.
You're so much more than that, though.
I was
exactly.
Say that.
That's why they should name these characters. This is Star Wars racism, and it's not the first time. And I've been silent about it too long, and I'm just kidding.
I was thinking like what he would point to me and say, and I don't think I want to say it on the podcast.
It would call you a wombat.
Yeah, wombat.
Wombat.
Yeah.
Immediately.
I don't know. So Horatio Sands is back. I guess we don't have a name for him yet. So he's just Horatio Sands. Let's call him that. Because yeah. Horatio Sands, at least.
It's hilarious.
And I was thrilled to see Horatio Sands back. I mean, the Mandalorian grabbed me very early on with the whole dynamic between Mando and the Horatio Sands character is like, you know, a dominant part of that very first episode. So it's fun to get him back. And it's fun to know that he's going to continue to be like part of the lore. They could check in on him. They can check in on Greef Karga. They'll check in on Cara Dune. And like, that's fine. And that's great. But it did feel like, I don't know, am I alone here that, like, timeline-wise, like, a lot of this felt very fast to me.
Super fast. I think the pacing was like, really
Navarro
quick.
Navarro is killing it. But weren't we here, like, a week ago, and it was, like, Imperial occupied, and now everyone's, like, we're having, like, a farmer's market in the middle of the street?
I don't think it's been, like a
we're
week.
Already
up, it's been
we're
a minute.
Already up,
it's been a minute.
We're already up to, like... We're getting like so rainbow carrots back
week.
On the
yeah.
market.
Just,
like,
just allow the place to be gentrified and move on, Wiggler.
Yeah.
But it happened so
fast. Let Law and Order come through and fix the problem.
It happened so fast.
There's a school.
There is a school.
How can you be upset about children
with
learning?
With space they've macaroons. Got, we gotta talk about the space macaroons.
They're spoons. They've got full space macaroons.
They've got blue smackaroons. I don't know what you want to call them. They got blue cookies. Like, everything's great. Things are going great. They've got a new deputy in town, Marshall Dune.
Marshall Dune. Also, really, a protocol
we're
droid.
Going back to the Marshall well this quickly. I haven't stopped thinking about the last Marshall. I only have room in my heart for one Marshall in Star Wars right now.
There are a lot of Marshalls.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
that store is ubiquitous.
Yeah, it's sort of every town's going to have one, I presume, right?
Every town's going to have one.
That'd be a good name for the Horatio Sands character, Marshall.
Marshall. But there is a Marshall. There's 32 Marshalls. Too many Marshalls.
There are 8 million Marshalls.
Yeah.
There's
yeah,
a Marshall in every town yeah. of every
He'd be a
planet.
Good Marshall. He'd be a great Marshall.
Sure.
But it is fast, Latanya. No, I mean, like, there's like he
no,
was like,
very
oh,
fast.
Your ship's gonna require a shit ton of work, so why don't we just put the baby in school for a minute,
mm-hmm.
and you can come with us to this Imperial compound that's been hidden for a while that we really need to get rid of, that is not that far away. That's pretty,
no.
You know, it's just a speed, an hour on a speed bike out of here, if that. Seems
yeah.
like it was like 10 minutes away. And it was like,
it
well,
seemed
your ship's
pretty
not-
quick.
Ship's not going to be ready just yet. And so they go and they do that. And then, like, a lot of the episode is just, like, stomping around a base to blow up the base. And then, like, the Mando flying back. We don't even get to see any of that. And then he gets, like, back in the Razor Crest. He's got the baby already at that point. He's in the Razor Crest. And the Razor Crest is, like, dressed to the nines with, like, more in better shape than we've ever seen it before. And all of that's happening in, what, like, 2 hours? Yeah, that's a really long day. I don't know. I know I'm picking at nits. I know that I don't know. It's fast.
It was very fast. Things happened very quickly. There was a moment later in the episode where I was just like, wait a minute. Has Mando not been on screen for like 5 minutes?
Yeah.
What happened? Yes, it was very quickly paced. There wasn't a lot of dialogue, but I'm also fine with that,
sure.
given some of the individuals who would have had to deliver that dialogue. Yes, it was a very fast-paced episode, but the action of it was like classic aerial battle on Star Wars unbeatable stuff for me.
Yeah.
Like, that's the stuff that really helped me just be like, okay, maybe this episode isn't going to be like the magical key to everything. Maybe it will, but there's so much action in it, and I'm very excited that Carl Weathers is doing this and acting the way that he is, and so directing the way that he is, and everything looks great. And yes, the ship gets fixed incredibly fast, but Mando does some really, really cool flying stunts in it. So
he does fly. And they're like, get out of here quick. You could go faster. He's like, all right, I won't be in the show for 10 minutes, but
yeah.
Peace out, guys.
We don't need me in this show called The Mandalorian.
The actor had to go for a sandwich run, and they're just like, "That's fine. Yeah. We could not have you in this little bit. You go out, you get the sandwiches, and you come back, and then we'll continue filming."
Definitely the longest stretch without Mando on the show so far, I would say. I think that comment about speed, like, is not just like the internal events of the episode and like the mechanics of how that all works, but I also to the point of like, it's been a week and now like everything's happening on Navarro and they're selling rainbow carrots and like everything is just like hunky dory. But I also think like beyond that, and like you could say however much time has passed and, you know, justify it however works best. But one part of that I think, like, I feel like we're back at Navarro very quickly. I think like we're back in this storyline very quickly, and it for me feels like oddly disruptive to like sort of the momentum from last week into where we seem to be going next with a very prominent player from the Star Wars animated universe that is slated to make an appearance here pretty soon based on what we've been informed in the most recent episode and everything that we know beyond that. Kevin, I'm still trying to keep it fairly vague for you.
I'm assuming just from context, because is the person that they were told to go meet from the cartoon as well? Because
very, 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 very important character from the animated series. Yes.
Interesting.
So when we get there, we'll go long on that. But I don't want to just be like a crotchety, you know, old man shakes fist at the sky about this. Like, do I have any basis here, or am I just being over demanding of the Mandalorian, Kevin?
I don't know if you're being overly demanding. It's hard to like contextualize time in this framing, right? Because we don't know how much time has passed. And I don't mind checking back in with Navarro. Like, for me, I don't think it's like super quick, and it was such a vital part. I mean, these are characters that obviously played a huge role for him, so like having a pit stop on this like rocket adventure he's been going on kind of makes sense. That all said, it did feel like, you know, a pit stop episode, which I think is exactly like it was. I do think the more minor things, like, I don't mind coming back to Navarro, but yes, the ship got fixed right quick. I wish we got more of Baby Yoda in the school. I wish we got a little bit more of that part of it, right? Like, what's going on there? We had a protocol droid, which we were like, hey, then we need a protocol droid to try and translate
Cliff,
you know, Baby Yoda. So I wish there was a little more of that part of it. And I liked the siege part. I mean, that was cool. That was action packed. I wish they delved a little bit more into like what exactly is going on there. I mean, I think that they are unaware, just like we are, but like to be like, oh yeah, the experiments that were being done with Baby Yodes and these things and what's happening, and then like, okay, then we blew it up. And I'm like, okay, but I have questions. And so I was kind of surprised that they just moved on from that really quick. I'm sure we'll get more from it. But yeah, it was just kind of like, here's a lot of stuff that you'll need to know, but also like, it's just a pit stop adventure, which again, is not far off from what the show is. So yeah, I'm with you that it's a weird one. You're kind of convincing me it's an odd episode as we talk about it.
I don't want to be a buzzkill. Like, I just, this is, you know, I think for a lot of reasons, this was one that like was not my favorite. Like elephant in the room type stuff. Like, I just, like, it's hard for me to like be good with Cara Dune right now. Like, it's hard for me to enjoy that character. I'm trying to separate that stuff out. If you don't know anything about the Cara Dune situation, a really great article from Joanna Robinson and Anthony Bresnikan on Vanity Fair this week that digs into it in really deep detail. We'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, they did a great job very tricky subject.
Yeah, there's some, you know, some problematic stuff going on with Gina Carano and the fandom, certainly. You know, probably could reduce that sentence a little bit. And it for me, I'm just having a hard time like really like feeling it with a character who I really loved in season one. So I know that there's a degree to which that's like a barrier issue that I know not everyone's going to have. Very candidly, that was a huge piece of it for me. But I think that it also, because like that's the mood that it got me in to begin with, like maybe I was just in a place to like feel like there's just like a few more like gaps in the floor than usual this time, like just a few further a few additional spots to like plunge down into than I feel like I normally get on The Mandalorian. Like, it just felt like kind of a loose episode in a way that was totally fine. We had a comment from, I believe it's Dave, aka Drayson, from David, aka Jason, from the Discord, who said the episode seemed way more like filler, even more than episode two. But having said that, it was enjoyable filler, more Ant-Man than Thor: The Dark World, to put it into to MCU parlance. And I'd agree with that for sure. Like, I would say that this is like, you know, like a mid-tier quality MCU level rather than like an out and out bomb. Like, I definitely don't think it was that.
It also couldn't have helped that the episode started with the world's worst idea for electrician repair. I get the reason why, for space purposes, Mando asked little baby Yoda to go back there. But when did he even have time to teach him what blue and red were? How was he ever going to be able to get that right? And he electrocuted our little child.
He did. So, but he's seen worse, LaTanya.
He's seen a lot worse, but that was the most adorable way, I think, that he's been put in apparel. And it was a very who's on first kind of thing. We knew what was going to happen because we saw it happen with BB-8. So, you know, it was just cute. And then we got to see another great moment that only came from, you know, the episode with Bo-Katan, which is the audience gets to see Mando sip soup.
Yeah.
Like, remove his helmet just a little bit.
Just
to sip soup.
Yeah.
Gets the scotch. Yeah. And Baby Yoda's all up in there, just like, what's there? What's going on in there?
So what do you got going on up there?
I've seen literally everything else. What is in there? Yeah.
So much. Too much.
Yeah.
Show me your face.
While I completely agree with you that the presence of Karen in this episode, you know, took me out of it, there were things that I paid attention to that had nothing to do with that. And there was a lot of action related stuff that I just decided to focus on. And then the last, maybe like what, 2 minutes of the, 2-3 minutes of the episode, when we get the actual lore start to come in, we get a little bit of it when they're actually, you know, on this, whatever this vessel is supposed to be that they're, this station.
Right.
But then we get the rest of it at the end. And so it was those things that I think were really the point of this episode. And they had to write a way to get us there. And the way that they wrote it is just by completely destroying Mando's ship that could be fixed in 2 hours. I mean, there's advanced technology, plus they needed it for the plot. So,
Let's get into the lore stuff, because like this is going to be like, I think, like deep talks, nerdy talks. It's going to, because we could go for a long time about like, and maybe we do want to just very quickly just be like, maximum Baby Yoda content, just like sublime. Incredible, tremendous, top shelf Baby Yoda stuff.
That scene, I mean, like,
Force pulling cookies and throwing up on himself.
When they're like flying there and his hands are just in the air, it's just so great.
Top shelf.
And like,
top shelf.
That scene,
top shelf Yoda. Part.
Like, he might not know red and blue, but I feel like all of us have been there in some way, shape, or form trying to talk to someone to explain something and they just don't get it. And we're just like, well, we tried. Like, so that, scene felt so true and real, like, in such an amazingly wonderful way.
What if he doesn't know the difference between red and blue because he wants to use the Force in a more equalized way?
It's possible. Yeah. Could be.
Oh, man. Now we're getting into a conspiracy theory about Baby Yoda here.
Yeah. Exactly.
But yeah. And then
what else are we going to do when we talk about lore, though?
Yeah.
I'm just getting there quicker.
My favorite thing.
The Baby Yoda content. Go ahead. Your favorite thing.
Oh, no. I like that he steals the space macaroons, and apparently that kid was just like fine with it, which is just like, okay, so then now are we showing Baby Yoda's a bully? He's just going to take what he wants from other children, and the poor other kid has to be like, okay, I guess that's fine. Like, that kid lost his lunch. He stole that kid's lunch.
He did. He took his credits and ran.
Okay. No. First of all, that kid's lunch could have just been cookies. No one's going to do that. You're not going to take the time to send your kid to a nice space school and only give them macaroons for lunch. That kid was just snacking in class.
We don't know what kind of macaroons they are. Maybe they're like the bubble gum that Violet Beauregard chews on. That is like a five course cookie.
You're right. It could be a 5-course space cookie. I had not thought of that until just now.
Five courses are with you.
Oh God.
Oh wow. Well, is this the Olive Garden in space?
Yeah.
Endless space macaroons.
Endless bottomless space macaroons.
Yeah.
But yeah, I if a tiny little space being used the Force, which is probably a thing you've never seen, to steal your cookies, would you say anything? Like, would you? No, I would leave that child alone.
I would gaze fully ahead and ignore.
Yeah. You should share.
He should have shared.
Always
right.
Shares, whether you want him to or not. He always shares his food.
Yeah. Well, Baby Yoda horfs down a full stack of blue cookies. He pukes all over himself, and it's incredible.
Yeah, onboard maintenance is the way that Mando refers to it as, and that is so funny.
And even he's like, "Ah, we'll deal with that later." He just like wipes it off. Like, yeah, it's great.
Buy him more clothes.
Well, and I'm glad that we have maximum Baby Yoda content this week, Kevin, because it sounds like, man, that Moff Gideon really wants to kill this baby. It's like, I want all of your blood.
Well, yeah, he definitely wants to do something with this baby, and it involves the baby's blood in some way, which there's not a lot, because he's very small.
They've already maxed out what they took from him. And Dr. Pershing, who we see in holographic form this week, it was great to see that character again. Mm. It's like, yeah, I mean, I need another sample. I only took so much because I didn't want her little baby. And so, like, they're gonna want more, and that could be very, very bad, especially knowing that Gideon's on his tail. Like, that there is the whole tracking plot that's going on, so... moving into the back half of the season, depending on how they want to pace this out, we could be in for some like real, real trouble really soon here.
Yeah, well, I'm really curious how all that's going to play out. Like, are we leading to like, you know, another big final confrontation moment? They're supposed to go meet a Jedi. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays in. Are we going to get a lightsaber battle essentially happening here? I guess a darksaber versus lightsaber battle. So there's a lot that could be building, that we could be building towards, which is maybe why they wanted to do kind of like a pit stop episode as well. And of course, like plot elements, right? They had to get the tracker on the Razor Crest. And I did keep expecting Horatio Sands to betray them. I don't know what, I mean, I guess because it's just such a trope. When in encounters like this, yes. Is just like, oh, he's going to do something and betray them. So I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised he did not. So I like that. And also, though.
Yeah, especially when he gave him the little thing that the code reader.
Yes.
I was just like, why would you give that to the prisoner? Of course, he's. And then he didn't.
Which.
So thank you, Horatio Sands.
Which at the same time, too, you know, looking at that, I do
he's
really.
Like the Gary of the Parks Department on Navarro, though.
Larry, Gary, Jerry Gergich. Yeah. But like, I do, you know, now that you just said that, though, I like that. I don't know if this was their intent, but I do like this idea here that we were all, he was presented as like a bad guy, as someone who stole, who's serving off his sentence basically here, right? And they're being mean to him, and we kept expecting him to betray them because that's our instinct, maybe through story, which has influenced our views. But like, when you think about it, this could just very well be a very smart commentary on criminality and the idea that we're expecting this character to do something bad because we think he's a criminal, but he doesn't, because he is trying to serve his sentence. He is trying to, you know, like he has gone through rehabilitation. Like, this is something actually, now that I'm thinking about this, I actually really kind of appreciate, and I hope they keep with that. Like, the idea that like, hey, we shouldn't just be like, well, you're a criminal, you're gone from society forever now, and we should treat you like trash. Like, that's not how we should be working as a society.
Carbonite on a wall,
right? Yeah. So I kind of really like this idea here now, that we are possibly making up on the spot, but I do really like that, and I think it's important. I think it's a story that doesn't get looked at often. I often, you know, feel like when people do this story, it is the inevitable trail that will be coming from bad guys. In comic books, I go through this a lot, where it's a shocking thing that they do in comics to put a criminal on a super team, and they do it all the time now because it's shocking and it creates, you know, a dynamic group or whatever. But they're so obsessed with like just having the shock value of it that they never think about like, well, what does it mean about a criminal being put onto this team, and is it a redemption arc, or is it just a sudden but inevitable betrayal? Like, this is way more interesting to me, and I guess we'll see where it goes. But yeah, now that we're talking about it, I'm sort of really into this.
It's cool. Yeah. I feel that. I feel that a lot. And I just love that character. I'm glad. I would like to see more of him. I'm sure that we have not seen the last of him. So it's great to have him on board. We're hearing about M counts because we don't want to say the word, right? Like, we don't want to spell it out.
No one wants to say it.
No, who's going to be the first on this one? To
not
say
me.
It? Not it. M count. The M count.
Why are you bringing this stuff in?
Because it's important. It's, I know, but like, this is what the show is doing.
Yes.
They're trying to, in the same way that Dave Filoni made sense of, or tried to make sense of the Clone Wars by, you know, having the clone, like animated Clone Wars.
That expands upon
it. Attack of the Clones that expands upon it. That's what this show is trying to do with, I think, all of the current canon, and even some things that aren't canon. So we might not have a choice.
Well, you know, from the moment that this show chooses to introduce Baby Yoda as an essential piece of it, you know, that is, again, we were talking offline about a totally different show, but like, to this, to continue a conversation that no one else has heard because it was just the three of us, we were talking about the difference between like a twist ending to a pilot versus an ending to a pilot that, yeah, like, it's a twist, but now you're just revealing what the premise of the show is. Servant was the show we were talking about on Apple TV. And I think that that's a great example of, like, yeah, it's M. Night Shyamalan. He does a twist. But the twist is, like, what happens at the end of that first episode, that's revealing the card of what the show actually is. And The Mandalorian did that with its very first episode, that it's a show about this outsider and this unlikely companion that he's going to be involved in and feel drawn to and need to protect, and the growing relationship between those two characters. But that companion just so happens to be only the third of the Yoda species that we've ever seen in Star Wars lore, which means by the function of that, the expectation is, like, we're going to get into some deep mythological stuff. And yet each episode often feels like, as Fringe coined it, the myth alone, right? Where it's like, it's the thing of the week, but it's pushing the story in probably like small ways, sometimes major ways, sometimes in ways that are just like maybe non-existent or not obvious yet. And they'll materialize later. I'm like looking at the prison episode as an example of that. I think that you have to expect that this is going to intersect with greater Star Wars mythology because of the vital inclusion of Baby Yoda. And this is a show that exists in a greater pantheon of stories that, unfortunately, and I'll be the one who does it, has midichlorians as a thing. You know, it's a thing. It's a thing. It's a thing. It's a thing. And in the very first season, they want...
Wait, is it a thing?
It's a thing. And okay, in the very first season, they want the child for his blood, for science stuff. You gotta imagine, because you've seen The Phantom Menace, you know that midichlorians are a thing. They want his M count.
We don't have to say it anymore. We can just say M count.
He wants his M count.
That's already an improvement. So, they were smart enough to be like, let's just never say that word and let's just call it M count. I'm like, oh, that's
yes.
A great piece of feedback from Ted, who says, I find it funny that they were too afraid to say midichlorians. They basically were like, yeah, let's just call it the M count. No one's gonna notice. We noticed.
I don't know what they're going to call younglings. What do they call them? Like, Y kids? Like, I don't know what.
They're all dead.
The Kevin, generalized, they don't have to worry about, like, younglings. What are they?
Yeah. Don't just call them anything anymore.
They're gone. Mm-hmm. They're gone. I mean, but the midichlorians remain. The M count remains. You know, it's still something that you can, like, test for, I guess, in the Star Wars universe. So it's going to be a thing. And then, like, to what you just said, LaTanya, about how the Clone Wars, the show, is like embellishing, I think, like, what those prequels were going for. And
right.
You know, the comment that we saw a lot of in the Discord is how the Clone Wars TV show makes the prequels better, you know, and I think that that's probably a graded scale, but, like, makes those make more sense. Certainly we are dealing with a show that takes place after the original trilogy of Star Wars, and we're dealing with a show that, as we are watching it, we know how the sequel trilogy of Star Wars takes shape. So I think that you have to anticipate that there are ways in which this show is going to intersect with that sequel mythology. And that's a daunting thing, because a lot of that stuff is, let's call it, polarizing, you know, and, you know, material that people don't necessarily either like or at least agree upon whether or not we like it. And I think that Dave Filoni especially is a proven quantity in, like, making material that works within, like, two poles of Star Wars really pop and work, just from what I've seen of Clone Wars, which I've been so impressed by, that I'm excited to see what he does with and what he and Favreau are going to do with this story that is like very clearly going to have to dovetail into some of the sequel territory, while I am simultaneously nervous about it and maybe not like massively excited about digging too deep into there. But I also think to say that like this wasn't baked into the premise of the show is ignoring that like Baby Yoda has been front and center from the very beginning. So eventually we were probably going to go into territory that's resembling where we're at right now.
I mean, yes, I mean, it's going to connect to the broader mythology, and I'm fine with that. I don't mind someone.
It's the show.
Mind someone, you know, who's smart enough to come in and clean up a person's mess to make sense of it. I mean, one of my favorite comic book writers is Geoff Johns, who literally has made a career out of looking at the dumb stuff in comics and being like, Jesus Christ, how do I fix this trash? And like done a good job with it. Like I like that. I don't mind it. But I can still acknowledge like midichlorians are stupid. But like calling them M counts, yeah, you know what? Sure. Calling them M counts, good solve. And I think that's fine. Yeah, we're going to talk about that sort of stuff. We're going to talk about force powers, and that's all fine. I don't mind any of that. I am a little now, though, the parts that have like gotten me, like, you know, my hair up on end is what you're saying about connecting to the sequel trilogy, because that's the part I guess I didn't think about before. And as you're discussing now in this conversation, that's making me like, oh, good Lord. Because like they're doing experiments with the blood, which has M counts, so therefore they're trying to create force users, I guess, which could be how Palpatine returns and stuff, which
there's clones in this facility, Kevin.
So
they're in the blue tubes and there's the bodies floating around.
Yeah.
And they look familiar. They look like a character that we maybe saw.
Oh, did it?
For a little bit in a couple of the movies in the most recent trilogy, but we have no idea why the hell they were there.
Oh, maybe that's what it is. Just my lighting was bad. I didn't see or I didn't necessarily recognize the clones inside the tube.
It looks a little bit like Snoke.
Oh. Yes. So I believe that the popular consensus right now, or at least one of the possible interpretations, is that these creatures look like Snoke, Supreme Leader Snoke, who Rian Johnson had cut in half without anyone finding out anything further about Supreme Leader Snoke. And some people love that and some people don't.
We won't have that debate, but this is also now connecting to me, because this doesn't connect to the Snoke part of it, because like maybe that, I don't know. We don't know, because now
it's not even addressing
the only other piece. The only other clue that's in there, at least, that I do think is worth bringing up is, I think a bunch of people who have noted that in that scene, some of the Snoke theme is playing musically.
Sure, but the idea of Snoke being a clone is something that wasn't discussed or introduced in neither The Force Awakens or The Last Jedi, but in Rise of Skywalker. That's where that came from. So this is going back to the Palpatine thing, which... my feelings on that are pretty vocal and well known about, like, you know, cue quote that we had from the other podcast of like, that's so dumb. Like, it's just so it's one thing to be like, oh, yeah, they're going to delve into the Snoke stuff. But now it's not even delving in. It's delving into what to me is like one of the worst things that they did in the new stuff from Rise of Skywalker. So I don't know. Maybe, like, sure, Dave Filoni can pull it off and be like, this is how that happened. But I'm like, yeah, but we're acknowledging the dumb stuff that happens pretty hard. Like, I don't know. It's like you can write a Superman comic and have it be modern Superman. But the moment you're like, we rebooted the universe, he's only been around for 5 years. And if you say, well, there was that time he was killed by Doomsday, I'm like, that raises a lot of stupid ass questions. And that's going to happen if they do that here. So you can like try and fix some stuff. Sure. But if you acknowledge certain parts of the mythology, we are also acknowledging the really, really dumb parts of it, and we can't pretend that didn't happen. And most of the time you can, because it's a franchise that's been around for 50 years at this point. Maybe there's some stuff you just choose not to talk about. I don't know.
What if it doesn't have to be dumb, right? Like, what if it could be something that we could derive joy from, and it's not dealt with in the worst possible way, which is how we got that last trilogy. Like, it just, what, this is a group of people that seem to have a storyboard and plans.
Yeah.
And, you know, are writers. So.
And are working together. Like,
and are working together
with,
and not.
With like a macro idea.
Not going to each other being like, okay, but who are we against? Who are we doing this against? I will only make a movie if I can do it against this other movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, who am I passing this off to? Like, what am I, I'm making this movie and then like, I don't have to think about the next thing because that's somebody else's problem. That's not the show. At least, God willing, that's not going to be the show.
Right.
The show is pretty specifically in the hands of a team that has a vision for it.
Sure. But counterpoint, remember how when we started this podcast, we talked about how we were so joyful to be in the world of The Mandalorian because we felt there was enough separation from the sequel trilogy, which we had very strong feelings about, or how it made us feel afterwards, and we were excited to be in a world of Star Wars and be excited about it again, and to be like, cool, it's its own little corner, they're doing their own thing, and now so it's like that's what I mean here, right? Like, maybe they'll pull it off, but you're still connecting to something that's, I don't want to be like, that killed my love of Star Wars, but for me personally, obviously I'm speaking for myself, they are now seemingly making connections to something that killed my love of Star Wars. And part of my joy about the show was that we were seeing a different part of the universe, that I didn't have to hear the words the Skywalker saga ever in my life again. But apparently that is not going to be the case. So like, if you can explore Baby Yoda, you can explore that species. There's so much you could do in literally the entire galaxy that exists besides going back to a corner over there to be like, let's focus on that corner and explain some of that stuff. And just be like, but why? You have a chance to do something else. You have an entire galaxy to play with. You have an entire other world that you can open up. And instead, it's like, we're going to go back to this thing. And I'm like, oh, sure. Now, again, I'm happy to be proven wrong. Happy to get to the end of the season and should see like, oh, cool, they made that reveal that happened in Rise of Skywalker interesting and awesome now. Love to see that. I would love to see it. Do I think that's possible? No, but I'd love to be proven wrong. That's my main thing here. Like, there is a mythos. Yes, I understand what you're saying, but I'm just going back to our original conversation about why we like this show so much. And it's skating on territory of being like, hey, we're gonna poke that wound.
Oh, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it.
It's hot like fire, yeah, as Aaliyah once sang.
It's like eating too many blue macaroons. We may just be puking on ourselves by the end of this thing.
We're having a really good time now. Our hands are up in the air. Waving them like we just do not care. But we're going to be vomiting blue macaroon at any moment. We just don't know when it's going to happen.
It's totally possible.
It's inevitable, though.
Or we're going to keep it down and love every single memory of it. It'll be great and be like, oh, remember that time when I thought I was going to puke, but I didn't.
That's true. That is a good feeling.
Yeah.
Whenever you think you're going to puke and you don't is pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or your rally, which, you know, like, nothing more American than the old Bootin' Rally.
The Bootin' Rally. Yeah, we could be into some Bootin' Rally territory here on The Mandalorian.
We've gotten the boot.
Yeah.
Now it's time to rally.
Time to rally. Yeah. Kevin, noted. Fair. Totally fair. Totally
totes,
noted.
Toads my goats. Fair.
But I think we also need to discuss what appears to be happening.
Yeah. We can discuss it. I'm just clearly and emphatically voicing my views on it.
I get it.
Which is what we do on this podcast. We talk about this stuff happening.
All right.
It's hilarious.
So I think like there's some thinking that like they're trying to like grab Baby Yoda to get his M count to either like develop Palpatine clones or Snokes or whatever. But there's also some other theories that are out there. So the end of this episode features Moff Gideon surrounded by like he's in a hangar and there's like all of these like dark suits, right, that are flanking him on either side. And like, shout out to my Star Wars nerds in the Discord. You are all amazing. And so many of you were just like, the dark troopers, like so many people
and
just
for the
popped
first
off.
Time I get to be one of those nerds. Because I yelled it at the screen. I was just, and I yelled the right thing, at the nerdy thing at the screen. So I'm very proud of myself.
It was great to check in on that Friday morning and like see people be like, the Dark Troopers. Like, wait, what is that? I don't know what it is.
Latanya, can you catch us up on this?
Maybe. Maybe not, though. All I know is that they are from a non-canon video game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So, okay. Yes. That's what I know.
So I believe this is once again from Drayson, who says that a Dark Trooper is essentially what you would get if you crossed a Terminator with a Stormtrooper. They were both the MacGuffin and the primary antagonists of Dark Forces, a Star Wars first-person shooter back in somewhere around 1995 or so. Dark Forces took place between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back and dealt with the Rebel response to the Empire developing experimental battle droids with the firepower of a whole battalion of Stormtroopers, which were the perfect opponent for a player in an FPS game. They were literally a Terminator-like endoskeleton with a retractable vibroblade encased in dark gray Stormtrooper-style armor with rocket packs to let them fly. And the general in charge of the project had a massive Hulkbuster-scale suit of Dark Trooper armor for the final boss fight on his flagship.
Damn! So, like, I guess,
this sounds amazing!
So it sounds pretty dope, and people are like, those, like, I think, like, closed captioning may confirm that they're Dark Troopers as well.
It does.
So that shit's happening, and, like, that is the reason, like, why, like, I am open to this team going into Star Wars lore, forward and back, because they are gonna pull stuff like this out, and I feel like more often than not, it's borne out really well on this show, certainly. And the fact that, like, Dark Troopers are here and, like, Latanya popped off, people in the Discord just, like, like yub-nubbing up and down. Like, people going wild. Dark Troopers going wild.
I didn't even really know why I was so excited. I was just like, those troopers are dark. this is happening.
and so there is a thought that maybe I got to dig into the feedback a little bit more to get this exact... this exact person who brought this one. Let's see if I can find it. I'm just making noises. I'm just making sounds. Okay, I can't find it. But somebody was like, hey, what if those clones aren't Palpatine? What if that's not Snoke? What if those are, or maybe they could be Snoke, who knows? But, like, what if those clones that are in, like, the vessels that Mando's, like, really, like, skeeved out by, what if those are, like, basically, like, the innards of the Dark Troopers? And so what they're effectively trying to create are, like, force-wielding Stormtroopers.
I mean, that's cool as hell. I'm into that stuff, because that, I mean, that, to me, the Dark Troopers are relatively new. They'll be doing their own thing with it here, because even the Dark Troopers that they're talking about from the past would have been between A New Hope and Empire, so this would be a further incarnation of them, so it would be a new direction. Sounds awesome. Like, something like that sounds dope, and I'd be into that, right? Like, you have jetpacking Dark Troopers, which are kind of like the Mandalorians with their own jetpacks and their own code and everything. So that kind of puts an interesting struggle between them, especially since, you know, Gideon has the Moth Gideon has the Darksaber. There's something that connects to the Mandalorian lore and that part of the universe that seems to be happening there, and that all sounds awesome and cool, and I'm all for that. Let's hope, for me, that theory is what holds true, but I guess we'll see. But yeah, that sounds wild.
Yeah. Dark Troopers, they're back.
Pretty cool.
If we're pulling from the Legends stuff, show me Dash Rendar. Anyone?
Sorry, I'm not there yet.
I think he's dead anyway.
I'm sure that everyone else will be very excited about the fact that you just said that. And I am looking forward to getting that joke as well.
He's dead. He didn't make it. Spoilers for Shadows of the Empire.
I was about to say, isn't Dash Rendar main character in Shadows of the Empire, right?
Yeah, no, he's only the main character in the video game. He's sort of a punk in the book. But he dies in the book, too. He's like, I don't got it anymore. And I think he, like, blows himself up. I don't remember. I don't know exactly what happened.
It's been a while.
It's been a minute.
He sounds great.
It's been a minute. Hey,
it sounds like a guy I may have dated.
You know how we wanted to name Horatio Sands? Can we instead name the guy in the corner with the gray t-shirt and the jeans that wasn't supposed to be in the episode?
I only found out about that because of TikTok. I had no idea, and I saw the TikTok, and I was like, what?
The coffee cup strikes back. So
it's back.
Not since the coffee cup on Game of Thrones has there been such a high profile. Hey, what's that doing here on your TV screens? And so, much like the coffee cup that didn't get edited out of Game of Thrones, there appears to be a key grip in the background on one of the shots during the siege of just a guy in a gray shirt and jeans. And I wonder if this is actually like they missed this. Or I don't remember which article I read that had this. So I greatly apologize for not sourcing this correctly. But somebody wrote about this and had an image embed of one of the Indiana Jones movies where you see like a grip in the background as well. Is there any chance that this is homage, LaTanya, that this is just Carl Weathers being like, yeah, that's a funny thing, and then people will laugh about this? Or is this just a mistake?
I would love to believe that it's an homage.
Trying to help him out here.
Yeah, I would love. I think that expert director Carl Weathers, who has directed, has he directed anything else?
Yeah, he's directed other.
Yeah, he's directed other stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, Strong Medicine's on here. Hawaii 5-0. Like, of course, consummate pro, just throwing it back.
Yeah,
you know, by making a mistake.
Yeah. Kevin?
I mean, I think it would depend on if that happened in Indiana Jones where they're wearing a gray t-shirt and jeans, in which case, yes, that is an homage. If they weren't, then no, it's not an homage.
My memory of the images were like, they're actually, the dress code was actually relatively similar.
If it is similar, then I feel like it could be possible.
But we'll find out when we watch this episode again, because it'll be digitally removed if someone noticed it.
What do we want to call this guy? I was thinking Chris.
Krista Key Grip. Krista Key Grip's pretty solid.
Yeah. That's good with me.
I was thinking Chris.
You think Chris will make any other appearances? Is Chris the one that planted the beacon on the ship?
Plant the tracker?
Oh my gosh.
Or did Chris like stumble out of one of the tubes? Chris was in the tubes and he stumbled out Chris now that it's going on.
Are they
Chris,
trying
get back in that tube.
To get our child, who must be protected at all costs, we must note. Mm-hmm. Are they trying to get the baby Yoda so they can suck out those M counts and plug them into Chris?
It could be that is the case. I've seen some talk of getting those M counts into Rey's father as well. That we don't want to talk about, but I'd rather go with getting the M counts into Chris.
Yeah, who's Rey's father, by the way? I'm kidding. It's so awkward. It is so tense. It is so tense. In fact, it is so tense that I think we need to take a quick break. We're gonna take a quick break here. Perfect time for a break. We're gonna stop down, throw it to our sponsors, and we'll be back in a second to talk more Mando.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's get back into the Mando. Plenty of time to stop down and break down and just collect ourselves. We're good. Everyone's good. We're breathing.
We're great. Chris is here. He's in the background Chris of my room right now. He's off camera. You can't fully see him, but he's there.
All right. Well, let's get. I'm really excited about this because, LaTanya, we're going to get back into the philosophy of the stars here, right?
We are.
And I know that you spend a lot of time working on this, and you actually had the great opportunity to speak with Chris to get the philosophy of the latest Star Wars star.
Yeah.
I believe that's what we're diving into today.
This is actually just an in-depth interview with Chris. We really got into some things. You know, it was a virtual interview, obviously, because it's happening in the times. But, you know, we each had our whiskeys and no, of course. but this is the philosophy of the stars. And given that so much of this episode was centered on the newly replenished town of Navarro, I thought it might be important to talk about the philosophy of law and order.
Yeah, bum bum ba da bum bum ba da ba dum You can stop me at any time.
No, keep it going. That is a flute, right? Like, whoever thought about coming in with a flute in that song was such genius. Executive producer Dick Wolf.
I mean, there's no more of the song.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't stop you mid-song because I'd listen to that theme every single time. It's on, so what was I going to do? Also, I was doubled over in laughter, so I couldn't actually form words. So this episode, anyway, much like episode one, has the idea of sheriffs or marshals. We had Timothy Oliphant is Sheriff Cobb Vanth, Construction and Refrigeration in episode one, and Tatooine, and now we've got Vanth
Landscaping.
Oh, the landscaping and construction. And then we've got Karen Dune, who is the Marshal of Navarro, a town once filled with unlawfulness, which now seemingly runs like a well-oiled machine, with Greef Karga kind of holding court, making sure that the money is flowing properly. And seems like a mayor? I don't know exactly.
Do we want to call him Mayor Karga?
He's a bit like the mayor. Now I'm
he's
not
kind
gonna...
of wearing like a vest that reminds me of like a mayor's vest.
Yeah, he seems very mayoral. Like he knows everyone. He knows where everything is, what's going on in the town. And he's really good with babies. Politicians have to be good with kids.
100%.
You know,
even if that baby's 50 years old, yes, you still got to treat him like he was born yesterday.
Especially if that baby is 50 years old. That is a vote you need.
Yeah, you need that vote.
Well, Baby Yoda's not from Navarro.
We gotta flip Navarro.
He's not from Navarro, so he can't.
Immigration is a thing.
Yeah.
Okay?
He hasn't immigrated there. He doesn't live there.
This is disgusting, Kevin.
There's no such thing as voter fraud, Kevin. Okay? Yeah. Let's move on. I'm not gonna get on this podcast and start advocating for the jobs of the police, but I do think that it's a worthwhile discussion to have, given that this is a space western and we travel into different planets and see different towns and their ways of doing things, and those towns inevitably have some kind of law and order apparatus. They have that in keeping with who are traditionally considered to be those good sheriffs or good marshals that we've seen in westerns in the past. This also leads to the opportunity to do things like open schools, because we have that in a place where we formerly had a cantina, which was like mostly full of outlaws. So in order to do this, Karen Dune is, you know, kicking ass and taking names herself. And most societies advance even more during those times by increasing commerce. We see that forming and or participating in some semblance of democracy even, which is kind of a bit of a pull that we get at the very end when that person leaves the insignia of of the resistance. So even if you look at the Wikipedia page, it's rife with important doctrinal laws or even constitutions. There's a lot in line here with Star Wars and the Mandalorian and our old West and the philosophy of law and order. So for the purposes of this discussion, we'll use the term sheriff to mean a law enforcement title used by police officers with the disbanding of the Imperial Senate, with the disbanding of the Imperial Senate, many local governing institutions were dissolved as well, leaving sheriffs from that sector out of work and they ended up settling in different places. And so while that's maybe the case with Grief, sorry, not Grief Karga, with Cobb Vanth, we know it's not the case with Karen Dune. We know that that's something that Grief Karga instilled upon her to help him clean up the town. According to, and this is very similar to something that would have happened in the Wild West. So according to Alyssa Harvey, who wrote in the article Law and Order in the Old West, when we picture the Wild West, we immediately think of a scorched desert where cowboys, sheriffs, and bandits shelter from the sun in saloons with swinging doors. So how accurate is the Hollywood depiction of it? If Second Amendment of the Constitution describes the right for people to bear arms, it teaches us anything, it's that American citizens spent a large period of history without any established law enforcement in the Old West. Colonists mostly left to their take the law in their own hands. A town originally populated purely by prospectors and farmers can swiftly become home to large numbers of new miners and traders. The rate of crime inevitably soared with the booming population and theft, saloon brawls, gunfights, etc. So eventually, more established colonies hired sheriffs and marshals to keep the peace, lock up drunkards and aggressors, and track down more of the notorious outlaws that, you know, to help the citizenry. And that is what we see Karen Dune doing, like, very early in the episode. A couple things to get us back to philosophies that we have studied in the past have to deal with principles of punishment in American law. And those are very much based upon the rules that started to be put into place in the American Old West. So the utilitarian kind of punishment is one that is justified because of the useful purpose that it serves, i.e. a societal benefit outweighs the harm of punishment. And this was actually fun for me to prepare because it meant that I got to go back through some of my old law school notes. So this is like just from a crim law outline. It's really just serving the deterrent effect. And that's a lot of what it seems like Grief Karga and Karen Dune want to do in their roles here, right? They see that there's a criminal and they want to punish crime so that others don't have a temptation to commit that and then chase away the criminal or give them a more severe punishment. Something that's more specific or individual is the effect that punishment will have on the offender, what the severity might be, and as well as whether or not there's going to be incapacitation or reform. It seems like that combined with a retributive kind of justice, which is a punishment that is justified because it is deserved. So deterrence not really being the focal point here, more so like you did something wrong and now you're going to be punished for it. The positive of that is that guilt is necessary and sufficient for that punishment. But the negative is that guilt is a necessary condition. That doesn't mean that only the guilty are punished. So we end up having our current societal system of incarceration and punishment that we actually have in the United States today. There are lots of different approaches and lots of different ways that people determine how to approach their roles as sheriff. And this has to do with reaffirming victims, you know, that may have been hurt by an offender, which is more protective, determining who should be punished and how much punishment should be imposed. And so all of that using a utilitarian approach seems to be, on Navarro anyway, the type of law and order philosophy that they have.
Yeah. I am so fascinated by the culture of Navarro now based on what it was, because what you're describing, LaTanya, feels like a very drastic change from where things were, even just last season. Like last season, like it felt like a very lawless town. And in that way, I think you're tracking for us like a lot of that like Wild West structure that became implemented in those situations. Maybe in that way, like this leap from old Navarro to current Navarro, it certainly tracks a lot better for me.
Well, it's almost like, you know, there was a force that existed in Navarro that had a lot of high powered weaponry and industrialized weapons and equipment that made them almost literally militaristic. And when that was removed and replaced with a system that had people that did, yes, you know, instill law and order, but rather than, you know, take the funds that they did have to essentially create a super soldier version of Cara Dune, they instead invested in like launching a school, for example, and have, you know, a system in which Horatio Sanz is like, you know, helping society at the same time rather than just swiftly outright punishing him and keeping him in carbonite. That changed how things worked there and almost made the community of
Blue
Navarro
macaroons for every home.
Yeah, improve a bit. It's weird how that happened. I wonder what that means. I don't know. Yeah. I can't put on my finger.
What was the shift?
Yeah,
I can't think of anything that it might be related to or mirror.
Yeah, I will say too.
It is interesting.
Yeah. What is also interesting too, speaking of the Old West part of it. I mean, you brought up the Hollywood stuff, right? And like, it if you actually look at and read about it, like the Hollywood portrayal of the Old West is really incorrect on so many levels, especially the freaking whiteness of it all. But I do like that. Like, if the actual Old West was a lot more diverse, by nature because of who was being essentially sent to do the work out there. And the fact that when you look at like with that context and you have a sheriff who is a woman and you have a mayor of a type who is a black man is kind of fantastic because that is actually a little more representative of what the Old West was actually like. So, I thought that was really interesting and cool as well. You guys did remind me, I forgot about the conversation that, Kara had with the Rebel Alliance or New Republic, I guess. Whatever they're going by at this particular moment. And I propose this question to Josh because she's from Alderaan. So do we think she's a secret Organa?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Sorry, I just ate a lot of blue cookies while you were talking and turned out to be one too many.
Yeah. It's a bit. It's almost like don't do those type of things. Anyway.
A secret Organa feels like that. There's no reason for that.
Yeah,
I would say
there's no reason to do those type of things.
I would say there is no reason to do that. But if they've got a compelling story to tell, and if they have confidence in their ability to tell it, I'm along for the ride, hands in the air, I guess. But I don't like it. The bad mouth feel. I'll say
mouth feel is such a terrible phrase.
It's such a bad phrase.
Bad mouth feel on that. Don't like that, be honest with you. And we had some feedback on this tip about this is great from the great Brendan Fitzpatrick. Can we talk about how dumb the whole did you lose anyone on Alderaan question was coming from a guy who said he was serving in the rebellion at that time? The answer, of course, is everyone. Why would you even ask?
I mean, maybe they went on a vacation at the exact right time.
The string of dialogue there is really odd. Of did you lose anyone on Alderaan? I lost everyone. I'm sorry for your loss. Like, it's just it is odd. A very odd exchange.
It is
a very strange.
It's classic, like the way people deal with grief. Though it's just like everyone in my village died. Here is in the T-shirt of the losing NFL team. You know, like that's classic. It's just.
I'm sorry. Here's a can of beans to get you through.
Some old
the
Nikes,
day.
Guys.
Yeah. These
really
ones
sorry.
Weren't too
here's
defective for everyone else, but you know,
has your society improved? Is it better now? Have we done something?
I will say, so the return of Appa of Kim's Convenience, and I did start watching a little Kim's Convenience this past week.
Mm.
Watched three episodes. Really fun.
Good.
I like it a lot. So I'm happy to see Appa again. I look forward to pushing further through Kim's Convenience. Really well done. Great cast. Cast is terrific.
Yeah.
A Wiggler recommend.
A Wiggler recommend.
I do wonder, but I mean, I think it's worth talking about here, especially as we're like bringing some more feedback into the podcast. Do we think that they are setting up a Cara Dune spinoff? Is there going to be a heightened Kevin is choking back something? Are they trying to, at the time that they construct this episode, what are they boosting the Cara Dune profile for? Increased prominence on The Mandalorian, increased prominence within the Star Wars universe. Do we have thoughts on this matter? Anybody?
I feel like importance on the character for sure. I mean, the character and I think Navarro and everyone there is going to play a decent role. So I think they're setting up, like, this is his crew. These are his peoples. This is, like, they went on the big adventure in the first one, and now they're all not retired, but gone their separate ways, and something's going to have to happen to bring everyone back together again. That's a story arc, right? That's a story trope. So there's a possibility there about, like, what is she fighting for if... What more is she fighting for after everything from the first season? So there's something there. I think if they're trying to set up a spinoff, I feel like beyond everything else, just looking at it even from that, like, just not that perspective, it seems a bit early to be like, hey, guys, let's do a Mando spinoff. Like, just take a breath. Take a breath.
I don't even know if it's too early because it's Disney. Like, of course they would spin off whatever, right? And we're going to get some backdoor prequel things probably, or sequels happening from the franchise we just got. But, like, my legitimate question, and this has nothing to do with any of the shady stuff, like, how can she cannot hold, she can't lead a show. Like, she can't act well enough to lead a show.
Could lead a very specific movie. I love Haywire. I think Haywire
really plays to her strengths, though.
Exactly. Yeah. Very specific movie, you know, in a very, you know, very particular way. It is much more of a fisticuffs movie than it is a dialogue driven movie. I agree. I don't know that, and I don't know the character sustains the show either necessarily.
Also, guys, Timothy Oliphant is right there. Like, he's right there. Like, justified in space. That's your sell. Like, you don't have to be like a connection to Alderaan. You don't need any of that. You already have the cell. You already have it. He exists and is justified in space. There's your show. We don't need much more than that.
Or neither. Yeah. You know, like you were saying, neither.
You don't need a spinoff. We already got Obi-Wan coming up. We've got a lot of Star Wars coming up. Let's take a breath and get all the other ones running, and then we'll figure out what to do from there.
Horatio Sands and the Frog Ladies.
Well, spin-off. Okay, that, yes, we could use that. That Francis and her family and Horatio Sands.
I mean, that's the show, Francis and her family.
Oh my God. McFrogman to McFrogman. I mean, I don't see why not. They're already
the Frog Awakens. Like,
they're already being described as the best love story in Star Wars, and I can't say that I disagree. Like,
how do you fight
name a more successful love story in Star Wars?
We could have had one if they made certain choices in Rise of Skywalker, but here we are. Right.
this is from Zach. Zach said, Zach, who didn't love this episode as much as most of them, Zach said, but it sure, no matter what, it sure was a good week for Star Wars sound effects. Seems like they played all the hits. The TIE fighter, the blaster fire, the speeder bikes, the targeting systems, the Wilhelm scream.
Wilhelm wasn't in that, though. That wasn't the Wilhelm scream.
It was altered, maybe, but it was definitely in there, because I wrote it down.
Yeah, it was an homage to it, but it wasn't the right, wasn't the exact sound.
It was a different pitch.
Mm-hmm. This episode sounded great.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounded so awesome.
Maybe this is an entree to us talking about some of the action set pieces then, because that all ties in. It did sound, I mean, the musicality is always fantastic. We always know when we're supposed to be tense, and we always like feel a little bit of like let it down. We know we're supposed to feel that. That old Ludwig is helping us out. There were a lot of like little tropey sound things of Star Wars that were happening. That screen, though, was subtly different, and I wonder how they changed it. I'd be interested in knowing about that.
Yeah. Do we have a piece of the action that we enjoyed the most?
I think for me it was the, you know, not elevator drop, but getting into the tank basically, and like driving off the side of the cliff, having the speeders show up and also dive down, two of them wiping out immediately, which was just amazing. Like that part I really liked, and then the TIE fighters taking off. I think that action set piece was really, really well done. Having a TIE fighter chase a ground vehicle, I feel like, is somewhat newish.
I'm trying to think. There's a little bit of the TIE fighters after the Millennium Falcon in Force Awakens.
Right, but that's still two ships, right? Yeah. In Rise, there's a moment what's his face is TIE fighters coming at Rey when she's on the ground.
Latanya, was there something from the action components of this episode that really stood out to you?
There was a part during when I was taking notes when Carl Weathers was in the back, Grief Karga. I just want to call him Carl Weathers and then have him tell me stories about.
I'm trying really hard not to call him Dylan. Because I love that character.
Just tell me all the stories from all of the movies I've loved you in, like every year of my life, it seems. So with him kind of like manning the guns in the back, I was just like, oh, they're going to kill Carl Weathers, aren't they? Like, movies love to kill Carl Weathers. They're going to do this. and then all of a sudden realizing there are only three people in that vessel, and then that Mando was not there for like 10 whole minutes, and him swooping down out of the sky was probably like Carl Weathers not dying, and then Mando swooping down out of the sky, and like just the most beautifully refurbished ship that we've seen. Like, we've never, I don't know, have we seen the Razor Crest like this since the first episode?
We haven't really seen the Razor Crest be like quite this operation. That's my Palpatine.
I got it.
Oh, we got it. We just didn't want it.
Yeah, it's yeah. These are secrets only the Sith know, Josh.
Yeah, sorry guys. I'm really sorry. I don't think that we've seen the Razor Crest quite like this.
Yeah, it's beautiful, and the gorgeous. Aerial dive is gorgeous, and all of the stuff that I like watching. The reasons I like to watch air battles in war movies, essentially, is what happened for me that I really enjoyed.
Did they cover the Razor Crest in Beskar? Was it the residual Beskar left behind by the Mandalorians who left Navarro?
Before did you die? I thought you were dead.
I'm back.
Like Moth Gideon, we thought you were dead, but no, you've come back.
I've returned.
Giancarlo Esposito has to play all of the bad guys. Like, that's one of the rules. I don't make the rules.
It is a rule. You didn't write it, but we have to abide by it. So here's another take from Fitz, who agreed that timeline logistics and stuff was weird in this episode, but then offers this. It says, what if Gideon let all of this happen? Maybe even funded some of the town's rebuild in secret, hoping that Mando would one day come back and fall into the trap and be in a situation where he could be tracked. Does that help explain like maybe some of my issues with this episode of like, it all seems a little convenient. Navarro seems like it's doing real well in like very short order. Is it possible that part of this is like Gideon's like, well, Mando might come back. So let's like hang out nearby. Let's get somebody with a tracker in town, and we'll track the Mandalorian when he shows back up so we can get that sweet baby's M count.
It's possible.
Maybe. I don't know. Funding Navarro, maybe that could be a thing. But I do, after, you know, the discussion of Law and Order, actually provided by Latanya, I like the idea of just like, no, if you just invest in the right things, you can get a city to turn around right quick. It's kind of a way better philosophy for it. I kind of like that. Like, sure. You can get an improved city really fast if you just invest in the right resources and, you know, treat people like people and do the right things, you can have a, you know, thing pop up nicely. Beyond that, I think the fixing of the Razor Crest, maybe, because like the mechanic that was being radioed, obviously, the spy who put it on there, maybe they were like, yes, let's take it to the shop. And then they go to the shop and then all of a sudden there's a wonderful shipment of equipment that just happens to be there. Maybe that part of it I could buy, I think, could be really interesting.
Yeah, what makes a lot more sense to me is just that Moff Gideon would have spies everywhere, but especially spies in every possible place on Nevarro, because there are two people that, I mean, this is a home base kind of for Mando, and it was the first place we saw him. So it makes sense to have spies there, just in case he comes back.
Yeah. All right. I feel awful about this, but we have to talk about the fact that Latanya, you're no longer in the running for the A.
Yeah.
So for those who don't listen every week or may not remember, we do have some stakes involved in this podcast where we wondered how many times would an episode of Mandalorian Season 2 end with Mando and Baby Yoda flying off into space.
High stakes.
High stakes. And whoever gets it gets an egg. And we put that out there before eggs were even a thing this season. So, like, that's how in sync we are feeling the Force right about now. So Kevin said 4 out of 8 episodes would end with the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda flying off into space. I have said 5 out of 8. Latanya said 7 out of 8, all but one. Mm. And you were already busted on that first one where you no longer had any maneuverability.
None.
And I'm so sorry.
No, you're not. You're not sorry.
No, I feel terrible about it. I really do.
It's I want fine. That egg, so.
Yeah, like, I know that you two are competitive and that you want your egg. I am competitive. I don't like losing. It doesn't feel natural to me. You know? I just...
You sense a disturbance in the Force here.
I do. I sense a disturbance in the Force. I'm almost positive that this is going to be either one of two things will be the case. The first is that I don't care about your egg and I will win in every other way. And the second is that I don't care about your egg and I will win in every other way. And they will go back and they will get rid of Chris and then they will tack on a scene where we see the ship fly away. And then I'll be like back into the mix. It's fine.
You're back.
It's fine. You're back. I will live another day. There will be another egg.
You know, if it wasn't for the fact that they had to show us these dark troopers and everything going on with Gideon, he could still be in this.
We've got to get this M count.
We got to get this M count. Stat. So I'm still in it. Kevin's still in it. I can only afford one more episode to end without Mando and Baby Yoda flying off into space.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a lot of maneuverability moving forward. I'm nervous.
I'm feeling all right. I feel like it, of course, it has once again come down to Josh Wiggler and I in a competitive battle.
I think that Kevin's going to get the egg, would be my guess.
I know what you're doing, Wiggler. I know.
I'm not
you.
Doing anything. I'm not. Why do you have these feelings towards me?
I flew too close to the sun. I think Kevin guessed just about right. It was like, how many episodes are there? Okay, great. 4.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I just imagine
it's like, great rules alone, you know?
Yeah.
Which is typically how I live life.
Yeah, you gotta eliminate 1 to 2 just for a chance of it. You gotta eliminate the penultimate episode because usually you're gonna have a finale that bleeds into each other. So, you know, just by... But just trying to...
Well, that's why I picked 5. I was wrong. I don't think I'm going to get the egg.
I don't know. It's
we'll
a pretty
see.
Close
you,
race.
You can still do it. Yeah.
We'll
you can
see.
Still
do it. I don't know.
Like, we
I don't want you to do it.
Actually see. It's okay.
I want the egg.
Well, have we determined what kind of... I mean, next episode, you two each have to pick the egg then. Like, now that it's a head-to-head battle, you've got to choose what the egg is going to be because we never determined. I had determined mine, and I'm actually kind of glad that I did lose because I don't know that you all can afford a Fabergé egg.
No, I can't.
So... You know,
Can you devil an ostrich egg? I would love a deviled ostrich egg. What would that be like?
Why? Why have you done this?
I like deviled eggs, and ostrich eggs are huge. So just sit down at a table with a big old plate and a giant deviled egg that I have to eat with a knife and fork.
I had no idea that you were Fred Flintstone, but it makes so much sense.
It makes a lot
of
sense.
It makes a lot of sense, actually.
The whole not wearing pants thing, like it all tracks.
I've never seen you stand. So.
Yeah, me neither. And I don't know what kind of egg I want, but I'll think about
all
it.
Right.
I'll think about it, and I'll hope to have an answer next
That's
week.
My assignment for you all. Think about your eggs.
Figure out your egg. Think about your egg. So chapter 13, Lucky 13, coming up next week. We are
13.
Past the halfway point of season 2 as of next week. I believe the word on the street, and this is unverified, is that we're looking at an episode that is about an hour long and that it is allegedly called The Jedi.
Oh, snap. Oh, so, boy.
It's happening. So, it's happening.
So it's happening, and a very important Clone Wars character is very heavily rumored, suggested, believed to be in the show next week. With some exciting casting behind that. And we'll see how that shakes out. We'll see how that bears out, because we will have a lot to talk about should that manifest. Next week is written and directed by Dave Filoni, which is contributing to a lot of that belief. And certainly if the title is The Jedi, then that really just kind of spells it out. So looking forward to that. I'm really pumped. And I want to just clarify that even if this was like, I would say this was my least favorite episode of The Mandalorian. I would still say, like, I had a great time. You know, it's The Mandalorian. Yeah. The Mandalorian's a blast. So even, like, you know, if there's, like, a weaker episode, like, so far, at least, like, the weakest Mandalorian episode for me is still fun. I get to talk to you guys about it, so it's really fun.
Yeah.
I hope that if Baby Yoda's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hope that if there is a Jedi, Baby Yoda gets, like, a tiny, tiny, tiny lightsaber. Like a little toothpicky.
Like a keychain, yeah. Like a keychain lightsaber.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be very fun.
Well, he needs some training, though. He really needs some training. It's like, yeah. A boy doesn't know how to do many things yet.
Does he need training? This dude already knows how to force pull cookies.
And don't know red from blue. Feel like that's important.
He's got to work that out. That part needs to be worked out. But the cookies, he knows to pull blue. He likes blue.
That was more like a cyan, right? What is it? Huh. I'm trying to remember the color now. It might be more of like a turquoise.
A teal or turquoise?
Yeah, teal or turquoise.
I see what cyan you're trying to do here, but you don't have to do that.
I do feel bad for not calling them cyan cookies, which they clearly are. Yeah. So the cookies are on board. We are on board for more Mandalorian next week. In the meantime, Kevin, we're going to swing into Spider-Man 2 this week, so people should look out for that. We've got more Lost on the way on Down the Hatch, some more zombies on the Walking Dead shows, some disco on the Star Trek podcast, some airbending and firebending and all the bending on Hang In There, the Avatar podcast. Gotta be honest, a tremendous time here on Post Show Recaps. If you're not a patron yet, consider it. Patreon.com/Post Show Recaps. There's not only a very robust Star Wars conversation each and every single week, we also have like bonus things that are fun and cool, such as bonus podcasts that are only for the patrons, as well as sometimes like watch parties with the people in the Discord. And this week we're watching Willy Wonka at 3 p.m. Eastern on Thanksgiving. We're going to have a great time. You're alone on Thanksgiving? Well, guess what? Not anymore. we're going to go to the factory and eat the gobstoppers, and it's going to be a great time. Hopefully, we're not going to puke like Baby Yoda. So think about it. Consider it. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. LaTanya, what's up? How you doing? Where do people find you? What are you getting into other than shouting Al Pacino gifts at my wife?
Yeah, I had a gif off with the great Emily Fox. And it was wonderful. It'll probably happen again at some point.
I expect so.
Yeah. I'm just hanging out on Twitter. at LK Starks, talking to people, trying to figure out what my Enneagram is, because I had a full freak out about the fact that I couldn't figure it out yesterday. That's a reference to a RHAP podcast that Chappelle was on. So we'll see if I ever get there, and just hanging out with you two, you know, chilling.
Okay. So at LK Starks for LaTanya, Kevin is at Kev Mahadeo. Kevin, the floor is yours. What are you doing? What's going on?
Not too much. I don't got anything in my personal life. But you know, as far as watching stuff, I guess that's a plug. I'm watching things in my personal life. Recommendations happening. I finally bit a bullet and am on a trial for Apple TV, which is very exciting. I think Josh has kind of hinted toward this. So we started Servant, which was shockingly very good. I'm not done yet, so I'm halfway through, but I'm really enjoying it. Mythic Quest is phenomenal.
I finished it.
I'm wonderful, really loving, right? Mythic Quest. Yeah,
it's so great.
It's so accurate.
Poppy
also,
Lee. Poppy Lee for life.
Oh my god, yeah. Poppy Lee is so good. But it's so, and Danny Pudi. But it's so accurate to like what the gaming industry is like and like levels of it. So I'm really enjoying that. And I know Ted Lasso is another one I'll be watching. Everyone has been talking about Ted Lasso.
You're
so
love
don't
it.
At me being like Ted Lasso. I'm like, I know. I'm getting there. So yeah, that's I think that's I'll plug for this one.
All right, cool. Well, that's all great stuff, and lots of great Mando stuff here, and so, you know, we'll do more of that, I think, next week. That's the plan, anyway. We'll be back next week with more Mando. Until then, everyone, we have spoken.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.